Great Sioux Nation to gather a couple next week here there in Rosebud to start our strategy, not only with the Great Sioux Nation, but also Bold Nebraska, 350.org, and all of our supporters. We're going to come up with a game plan also to keep the fight going. And all means, we need to stop this Keystone XL pipeline. We talk about jobs. It's only, the CEO said it only creates 50 jobs. These are temporary jobs that go to journeymen, not to local economy. It's people that are, I call them transients, that will be flooding into our state and onto our reservations to do harm within our state and our reservations.
We're going to leave it there, but we'll continue to cover this issue. Of course, Cyril Scott, president of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota, and Suzanne Goldenberg with The Guardian will link to your piece. She's speaking to us from Dallas. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
I'm Dime Roberts. In 1989, I took a trip to Taiwan with my mother and produced a radio documentary about our relationship. It's called Mei Mei, A Daughter's Song.
Well, I know Abuela take me to heaven. I didn't want to come by. She told me, it's not my time yet. If my time come, that's my home.
Mei Mei, A Daughter's Song won the Peabody and was played all over the world. For the 25th anniversary, I've turned this personal radio production into a film. Join me November 21st at 8 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for the first ever screening of Mei Mei, A Daughter's Song. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the KBU homepage under Community Events.
You can make sure KBOO Community Radio continues to inform and entertain Portland and the world for years to come by designating KBOO as a beneficiary in your will. Thank you for thinking about KBOO and the future of independent, community-supported media. For more information, contact Monica Beamer at 503-231-8032 or email monica@kboo.org.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont, and at Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing. Dot com. My town face.
And good morning. You are listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO. My name is Paul Roland, and I'll be with you for the next hour until 9 o'clock when Political Perspectives comes your way. And I don't have a guest this morning. I've had pretty intense guests, I think, the last couple weeks. Thomas Lindsay from the Community Rights Movement, and then Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, the author of a powerful new book, An Indigenous People's History of the United States, which I'm still working through, and I heartily recommend people, if you can, if you're able, pick a copy up. I hear there's someone said there was 30 holds on it at the downtown library, and only one copy, so that might not be a good route to go. I'm not sure where it's available, but check out your local bookstores. Anyway, so that song, Substitute, 1966, I believe, The Who, Live at Leeds, classic record. It's one of the early records that I owned. So Substitute, what does that have to do with what we're talking about today? Well, you know, perhaps a lot of what we're living in, you know, is actually a substitute for something else, for a more authentic, a more real, is that possible, way of living. You know, we just kind of get used to what we're in, and we grow up in it, and it just becomes sort of background noise, becomes sort of naturalized, as they say in some schools of thought. It seems natural to us, but indeed it's a social construction that has deep, deep historical roots. And perhaps it behooves us to look at those historical roots and try to understand the way we're living as not the only way to live. And I think we all know that. But do we really know what we have substituted for and what the nature of this substitution complex, as I like to call it, is? So that's the theme I would like to talk about today. I hope that strikes a chord with people. Number to call in will be 503-231-8187. And I kind of wanted to also follow up. You know, an hour goes by so fast. You know, I've mentioned in the past, since I've been doing this program for several months, that I part of what I wanted to do was establish some continuity of conversation, because we really lack continuity of conversation in this culture. You know, I'm thirsting for deep, impassioned, involved conversation on a regular basis, discussion groups, collective assemblies like we had in Occupy in the day. I wasn't involved here in Portland, but I was involved in DC area Occupy. Really just an amazing experience in collective coming together, which we just have so few chances to do, the lack of collective spaces, the lack of public forums. So this is a precious hour. You know, I know 8 to 9 in the morning might not be ideal for a stimulating conversation on important topics, but it's the time we got allotted. I think we need to make the most of it. Like I say, there's precious few, and most of the talk shows that are out there, as we all know, are depressingly of a low level of discourse. You know, right wing, I guess you can call them right wing, but I just prefer to think of them as just really closed ways of thinking. There's very little room for opening up new ideas, stimulating new perceptions, really looking into things deeply. You know, here we have our constraints too. An hour is not a lot of time. Each person has just a few minutes to express, you know, your thoughts. And, you know, those are the constraints we work in. And I think that's part of the culture that we live in as well. You know, there's these structures that we have created for ourselves. And one of those structures has to do with structuring things so that often there really isn't enough time to fully delve into things, fully hash things out. You know, there are mediation processes now, which is a really good thing, because usually, you go before a judge if there's a conflict, and, the judge gives you you have to pay for a lawyer, and you have very little time maybe to speak your mind. It's all very rush. so mediation processes are a good thing. But you really have to seek it out, and you really have to give it time. And, usually things are structured for us by others, even here on KBOO. We are community radio. People can come in. Many people come in and volunteer and get involved. But in a way, I'm presenting these ideas and structuring it. But I try to leave things open. So it's a give and take. It depends on your willingness to get involved. Your willingness to go to the phone and dial the number and put yourself out on the line. I'm kind of putting myself out on the line, especially when I don't have a guest. Kind of have to sit here and talk and hope that people resonate with what I say and feel that they want to join in the conversation. So anyway, the interviews I had in the last couple of weeks with Thomas Lindsay about the community rights movement and Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, both hit on this theme of substitution in very profound ways, I think. Thomas Lindsay, he talks about the fact that we basically established a system, which, he doesn't talk about it explicitly, but substituted a whole framework of governance for other forms of governments that were more community-based, more participatory, more horizontal. And we're living with that, And he talks about the fact that, let me just read a paragraph here. He talks about a conference where he'd been trying to explain to the people at the conference how our U.S. structure of law systematically strips communities, the very places where we live, of the power to adopt laws when those laws come into direct conflict with corporate decision-making, and how our system thus prohibits our communities from banning projects and activities that they consider dangerous and harmful, everything from corporate factory farms to the land dumping of sewage sludge and hydrofracking for natural gas, which, of course, most people can't hear because it runs counter to a central myth that we've been fed all our lives, that we actually live in a democracy where we have the ability and authority, indeed the right, in quotes, to govern ourselves within our own communities. Because of our belief in that myth, we can't hear anything that doesn't fit within it. That's a very profound thing. When you get this substitution complex, this myth, as he says, it tends to crowd out other ways of looking at the world. So, I'm trying in my own little way to bring in those other ways. And so we have a couple callers. Before we go to them, I just wanted to, trying to establish this continuity of discourse here. So, that's Thomas Lindsay's approach. And of course, there's way more to say about than that. And Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, colonization, what was colonization, but a substitution for an entire different cultural complex for other cultures that lived here, one could say sustainably, because they certainly were able to survive for thousands of years, whereas this culture, as Thomas Lindsay calls it, can't be sustained, it's not legal to be sustainable because of the structure of law which was imposed. Colonization is a substitution, and we are the heirs of that. We are still living a substituted culture. So there's a deep cultural problem that we have to deal with. But that's just a real superficial touch on it. But let's see what our callers have to say. James, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Paul, for opening up the airwaves for this kind of discussion. I appreciate it. I think you kind of set me up to drop a... So here's something I've been mulling over. The Occupy movement really opened up my mind to how we can reimagine the culture that we're in, and from the inside out, begin to practice new ways of doing things. And I started thinking, what would happen if we started organizing across the country and even around the world for, let's say, a week, where folks, you know, it'd be like a general strike, but it would also be like a call for something on the order of the Occupy movement, where we begin organizing for a week 5 years from now, where we're going to take the week off and we're going to gather and we're going to share resources to make sure that everybody has what they need. And we're just going to gather and we're going to talk about alternatives. We're going to talk about the difference between the way that we live now and the way that we're tied into the corporate structures that dominate.
Okay, but leaving aside the rest of the country and the world, so, I mean, doesn't it kind of have to start where we are now?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that what we begin organizing for is something on the order of the Occupy movement, that you stop for 1 week, that you just stop. You stop what you're doing to contribute to the way things are, and you gather wherever you are, in your community, in your neighborhood, and we get together and we talk and we assemble and we discuss, what do we really want our communities to look like? What are the ways in which we're being kept from doing that? Are there legal structures? Are there corporate structures? What are the influences on our lives in our communities that are affecting our ability to really live the lives that we want and that we can imagine, but we don't know how to get there?
Yeah, that's a great idea. So like, are you doing that right now within your community?
Well, I'm a pretty busy guy. Without going too deep into that, I have a new job that is incredibly intensive, and you know, I work with young people, and so it takes a lot of my time right now, and it's a huge learning curve. And so, no, I'm not directly involved in that right now. And but that's part of the reason that I love KBOO, is that I can put something out there, and maybe there's other people who are thinking about the same thing, or something similar. And you know, I want to put that out there, because I think it would be really. I mean, we talk about, I see calls from anarchists and the labor movement for a general strike. Well, here we go. And now, not just for no reason, or not just to say, you know, enough with wages, but to really say, we as human beings need to stop what we're doing to contribute to the destructive practices that have now been globalized thanks to American influence, and really rethink what it is that we want in at the community level, but around the world. And that was
okay, great.
Just the stopping alone, right, is a huge disruption to the system.
Yeah, no, people have dreamed of a general strike for, you know, as long as there's been people working at a grassroots level in the workplace and with working people. And it's there have been moments in time where it has worked, precious few. And yeah, I think that's a great thing to work for. So thanks for calling and putting that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also want to just throw in with the indigenous perspective that I remember the discussion around the Occupy movement and the term Occupy being problematic, especially for marginalized groups and for indigenous people who have been, their land has been occupied for centuries. And so I just want to throw that out there just to problematize and say that the Occupy movement wasn't perfect. And there were still some issues there, but I think the concept and the idea, if we truly take the ideal, that there's a really rich possibility there. So thank you all. Appreciate your time, and I'm interested in hearing the rest of this.
Okay, great. And we do have a couple more callers before we go to our next caller. You know, on the theme of that, the term Occupy, which, you know, in Washington D.C., a similar discussion ensued, because, you know, it was just Washington D.C. over the last 20 years just undergone like Portland is now, just a massive gentrification and a pushing out the black population to the inner suburbs, similar to what happened around St. Louis, and really has led to this horrible police abuses in Ferguson and all those surrounding counties where you have largely white police forces and a largely African-American population, again, which had shifted there. Anyway, so the African-Americans who got involved in Occupy were very concerned about that. So on that note, I just wanted to say that, you know, there's a line in that Substitute song, which I always I actually always had a little bit of a serious problem with, because, you know, the whole use of the term, the word black for meaning like negative and bad, there is a line in there that says, I look all right, but my shadow is black. So I in the spirit of flagging these problematic uses of language, I just wanted to put out there. I still love the song, and I'm sure, hopefully, maybe The Who, if confronted with that, would also become, you know, be aware of that. So we do have another caller. Bill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for the program and the opportunity to speak up. Are you familiar, Paul, with the slow food movement?
Oh, yeah. I actually lived in northern Italy for many years, and yeah, I was very familiar with that, yeah.
Northern Italy. Did you get a chance to go to Domenher?
Oh, no, but that's another subject.
Okay, yeah, it is. Well, actually, it's what I wanted to talk about. I'm interested. I've gotten involved in something called permaculture, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. And then I got into Robert Hart's vegan form, which is food forest gardening. And then I read the books 1491 and 1493 by Charles Mann, and I realized that the indigenous people have been doing this for thousands of years. So what I call what I do now indigenous farming, working with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to do it on a larger scale with other people, create an eco-village that would allow me to let go of my car and bike and safely and walk, you know, to work and to my garden and my farm and friends.
Yeah, well, there are a number of examples, as you're probably aware, in Portland, where I am, and are you live in Portland as well?
I'm actually in Clark County, Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, great. Well, sorry to make that assumption. It's good to have people. Most of our callers do tend to call from Portland, but I do encourage people from Southwest Washington and the Gorge and the Mid-Willamette Valley and other points are getting this to call in. So do you know of any eco-villages around where you live?
I do not. I do know a friend who's had, I guess, a shared house.
Uh-huh.
And I do volunteering, sometimes tabling at Clark College. And I have noticed in the last couple, 2 years, more blacks, which I'm happy to see, but I wondered about it. And you explained it in your comments recently.
Mm-hmm.
So then I've talked to them and I've asked them if they're in a shared house, and they often are. Columbia Eco Village is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, there's I think four or five in Portland, and a lot of them do have what you're talking about. You know, tend to be oriented towards that sort of forest garden permaculture model, as well as the shared co-housing. But yeah, starting more. I think that's a model to continue, and you know, there's a lot of them. You know, the Columbia Eco Village was an old apartment complex with kind of like duplexes and or kind of like row houses. I know the Kailash Eco Village was like an old motel.
That's an excellent one. Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's a number of them, and some of them were built from scratch. You know, people got together that had the money. You know, of course, money. There's, you know, the obstacles are money, finding other people to do it, and finding a place. And those are the starting obstacles.
I find actually, Paul, the biggest obstacle is people are tied in or locked into the substitute. What you talk about, they see these 3,000 or 4,000 ads every day that tell them they're going to be happy if they go shopping more, and they don't realize the what I noticed from my food forest. It's over 10 years old. And it's just a very special place for me. It scares people who aren't open-minded because it looks a little bit like a jungle to them, chaotic, you know, like a real forest. But it really does my heart and my soul great good to be working in there and to spend time in the garden.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who's got a little plot of land can do something like that. And there's a lot of different programs to facilitate it. There's, you know, Portland. God, Portland's one of the centers of such activity. So,
Portland, Eugene, yes,
yeah.
Corvallis, yeah. Food Not Lawns, and VBC is an amazing city repair organization. I've volunteered for them as much as I can.
Yeah, and then there's the I wasn't prepared to talk about this. I don't have at my tip. There's a number of organizations. Everybody else has others to call in. Yeah, I think that's a great. I mean, personally, because I lived on a farm for 14 years, and I've been involved. I've done gardening, and I've been to like a forest farming workshop back east. And yeah, no, I'm way into that, and I think that's part of. You know, part of where we need to go to get back away from this substitution complex model and back towards something that actually is more integrated with the, you know, the ecological matrix reality that we live in.
Right.
So let's we got another caller. Is there any other burning points you wanted to make?
Well, the main thing I wanted to do was the talk about the slow food, which you're familiar with, and slow money, which just started. And they posted the 3-day conference on Slow Money 2014 on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And the first one is 2 hours, day one, and then the second one is 9 hours, and I'm working my way through that. And it's just so refreshing and so inspiring to see what some people are doing around the country as far as changing the food system, which is so important. As you know, the slow food movement equates culture with food.
Mm-hmm. So slow money is.
If I could talk to somebody off air, get your email address and send you the link.
I have a special KBOO devoted one. I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to mention that, or who knows, I might have just forgotten it. But Paul R. KBOO, all together, all small, PAULR. KBOO at gmail.com. And I'd like to also take this opportunity to thank the people who have written me so far. I only gave it out once, and I forgot the last couple weeks, I think. And I am making my way through and responding. So if you haven't gotten a response yet, don't despair. I may not respond to everybody, you know, because if I start getting a whole bunch, because I do have another email address that I get massive amounts of email. But yeah, it's paulrkbu@gmail.com. So yeah, give me a send me a message, and I'd love to be in touch. And thank you for calling.
Well, maybe you could post it on the KBOO website
because
I've had one friend who, as I've been promoting this Slow Money conference, watch it, and she just loved it. And I loved it, and I think a lot of people would if they just take the time. And you can listen to it and work on your computer and do other things, just like you can listen to KBOO while you're working.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you very much for calling. We got a couple other callers, and be in touch. And I guess Steve's on the phone with the next person, but we do have Jessica on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hey. I just wanted to exactly what you want to talk about, but I do want to let you know I have a bumper sticker on my car that says Begin Within, and I think that's where we all need to start, is within ourselves, like the gentleman before. What feeds his soul, what feeds each of our souls, is kind of the grassroots of any of us and any of us as a group to get along, to figure out what it is that I need personally before I go into a group, before I try to reform anything, is to figure myself out, clean myself up before I can get along with anyone else or in a group. So if you get a group of people together, you've got attitudes, beliefs, all mixed together. And it does take a lot of time to figure out what needs to happen because everybody starts projecting their own ideals, beliefs, insecurities, fears into that group. So it takes a long time to figure that out. So I think bringing it back to us as individuals, figure ourselves out, then try to get along. But it has to occur that we even need to do that first. So
well, yeah, I that's I have a slightly different take on it, or maybe I don't want to say different because I don't want to make it sort of an oppositional thing. I think and the difficulty of this again is the structure of this time frame is it's inherently difficult to have an actual conversation. Sure. But be that as it may, I think it's a dual process because my view is that part of what the substitution complex is that we've substituted for a form of collective self-organization that nurtures us as individuals. So it's hard for us to figure things out by ourselves because we have become isolated individualistically by this culture. So, you know, we need to help each other do it.
Absolutely.
Also.
Absolutely. And I wholeheartedly agree. And if we can get together, if that even occurs to us and understand that I'm helping you help me help you. And I agree. I think it has to occur first that I don't want to say we're all problematic, but mixing all of that up is problematic. So it's somehow we have to take a step back and have some accountability and ownership for our own personal, but yes, indeed, lending a helping hand for that and being open to that.
Yeah, we definitely want to avoid the codependence trap.
Yeah, and I agree completely. I was, you know, my whole life I'm the poster child for codependency. So I understand that, and I think that this conversation is a really amazing topic. I could go on forever and ever and ever just because of my own work that I've done and lending that helping hand. But the other person has to be willing to be open as well. So
let me ask you a question then, put you on the spot here since you put yourself out there. So, I mean, have you engaged in any kind of group processes as you're going through your own personal work that... have you been involved in any groups that you felt did that work collectively as well in a way that felt satisfying to you?
Actually, no. I've tried and I've backed away because it gets so convoluted. And I'm kind of that person that lies on the outside anyway, kind of surveys and observes. And I guess that might be a protective mechanism for myself, but I'm that kind of person to stand back and observe and maybe interject. So, but no, maybe on a super small scale, but I've backed out of a couple of them. And I do have parent groups where, you know, groups of women or groups of at this, like my child's school. But not have I been a leader of any group trying to organize any kind of fundamental discussion or anything like that. So, no, I don't.
I've been searching for that group for my whole life myself. But anyway, yeah, no, it's hard. It's you know, I think the first thing is to acknowledge these things. You know that there are these difficulties because sometimes we just, brazenly forward thinking that we can do all this stuff without taking into account a lot of these difficulties that we're talking about.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I appreciate you taking my call. I really do. I think that I would love to be a part of a group that understands what it takes to be part of a group and to really get to the nitty-gritty of the conversations and of ourselves and really realize, you know, look, I'm projecting my own fear in here or being open to someone expressing that to you, and it gets messy really super quick. So, yeah.
Yeah, there has to be, you know, you have to give it the time and there has to be real commitment. You know, I've read a lot about and thought a lot about, you know, the whole, I was about to read something from this book I just picked up at the Kibu Book and Record Sale called Inversions, which came out in 1973, right, kind of, you know, on the cusp of that whole explosion of the 60s counterculture. And, you know, back to land communal movement, which is, you know, truly inspiring and an amazing thing. But so many of them, you know, just ran aground on these difficulties because people didn't really have a realistic sense of their own baggage and whatever. And you know, I hats off to all these eco-villages and group houses that function and, you know, self-help groups that work, whether it's, you know, whether it's 12-step or whatever, you know, because it's hard work, you know, like you say, you really have to deal with your own stuff. Anyway, we have
You have to admit that. It has to occur to you. I think that it has to occur that I am a single entity here with self, and I'm bringing that to the, you know, an ego or whatever you want to call it, to the table. So I then have to understand that I am putting myself out there. You're putting yourself out there. So let's talk about it. And it does take a long time to break that down. I mean, it's baby steps, and it really does take a long time to break it down and realize, and it does come right back to me, and it goes right back to you, but we're also in it together. So, but it's the time commitment, and it's breaking it down. So,
all right. Well, this
if we can get a group of people together that are willing to do that, it would be amazing. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there is no one big group that's going to do that. You know, people have to find, ideally, groups in our neighborhoods. I really think, you know, I can't say I'm taking any strong steps. I have to move out of my house in a little over a month myself. And, you know, we have to take into consideration a lot of things. But the more, you know, I think we talk about it and do make those attempts. So, yeah, I'm putting
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think what we do is we take something out here and we bring it into the group, and that's kind of what we talk about, but we're really talking about ourselves. So, but we take this political view or something, a problem that needs to be manhandled, when in reality that problem wouldn't be there if we looked at ourselves. But it's an opportunity. Everything is an opportunity. So we take that issue, we bring it into the group, and we talk about that. But in reality, we're talking about all this other stuff. So I think it's amazing.
All right. Well, thank you very much. This has been a good conversation, Jessica. And again, my email address is paulrkabu@gmail.com. Boy, I'm really putting myself out there. I don't want to make extravagant promises of being able to follow through with all kinds of things. But anyway, thank you for calling, and we have another caller.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. And, you know, yeah, that whole discussion of, you know, the political is the personal is the political, you know, where does it begin, you know, inside or outside? Do we have to make structural changes? And then that, you know, the Marxist idea, I guess, kind of, or at least people superficially took that. That, you know, have to create the new society, and then the new human will be born, or the, you know, what people think of superficially maybe as the new age movement, that, you know, it all starts within. I think it's, you know, it is a dialectical or whatever, some sort of process of working both at the same time, because we are conditioned by the without, and the without is perpetuated by the internal dynamics that have been created. So, deep stuff. We do have another caller, though. Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Yeah, you got the words to the Who song wrong.
How so?
I look all white, but my dad is black.
My shadow's black.
I look all right. I look all white. But my dad is black.
But my dad is black? I thought it was, I look all right, but my shadow is black.
No, I look all white, but my dad is black.
Well, that's even more interesting, huh?
And it's not a racist song.
Well, I didn't say that it was a racist.
It was a very, a lot of people over the years have criticized that line because they took it that he was saying that being black is inferior or something, but he's just always what he's talking about is that you can't go by surface appearance.
Well, right? You know, my bad. That's not the first song lyric I've gotten wrong that I've like lived virtually my entire adult life thinking it said something. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's done that, but wow, thank you so much for making that important correction. I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's actually a name for that. Mondo Green.
Okay.
Misheard lyrics. But that was actually for its time, that was quite a daring song, and he talks about some issues in that song that are still very sensitive. And at the time, in the mod scene in London, where people were just kind of going by what kind of clothes you wear and and judging you on surface things. And he's saying it's what's important is your the quality of you as a human being.
Yeah. No, I love that song, and there are some really amazing lyrics.
It's a challenging song. It's not the Who often have songs that they're not. You know, they're not what would you call positive sounding on the surface. But they make you think. They're challenging. They're disturbing. They make you think. That's sort of the initial level of the sort of social and psychological transformation you've been talking about this morning. Is that sort of kind of messing your mind up, so you start to think about things in a new way. And that I think that song was really one of the best. I mean, it was before the, you know, the later 60s and the more, you know, far out songs, but it really challenged the social scene that was strong in Britain at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the whole mod thing and all that.
Yeah. You know, Quadrophenia and.
Folks ought to, if you don't know that album, I can't really recommend the movie, but if you don't know that album, everyone should listen to that album. It's so beautiful, Quadrophenia.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's really great. And, there's references in one of the songs to if you complain you disappear like lesbians and queers. So that is he homophobic? No. He's saying that there's an aspect of life that's put down, that's put out of sight, that's not accepted by the mainstream.
Right.
And Quadrophenia brings out that sort of underbelly of life in a very beautiful way.
Okay. Well, do you have any other more general comments about the theme we're talking about?
Just in general, that you're talking about, you keep talking about groups and joining a group and starting a group and, probably a really good book to look at is Starhawk's book, Truth or Dare, because she discusses basically what happens in small groups, especially are you familiar with Starhawk?
Yeah, actually, we broadcast I think it was last Wednesday from the KBU archives, a show that I produced 25 years ago, included a lengthy interview with Starhawk that I did back then that I had totally forgotten about. But, you know, I'm familiar. I've read some of her stuff. I haven't fully read that book. I think I've read into it. But, yeah,
her fiction is quite good, too, by the way. Her book, The Fifth Sacred Thing. I found, if you like science fiction, it's a very powerful book. Truth or Dare is, it basically covers all the almost all the aspects of starting a small group, what you call small group sickness, which I think being in a radio station like KBOO, you're probably very familiar with that. That sort of infighting that starts where at first you're sort of all gung-ho about your goals and the things you're going to do in the community, but after a while you start, instead of focusing on that so much, you're focusing on yourself, on the radio station, and what's wrong with the radio station, and I don't like this person, and that person's doing the wrong thing, and so this endless infighting. And she talks about how to deal with that in a constructive way, you know, without sweeping the issues under the table, but how the people can come out of those conflicts stronger and better able to be community activists.
So
everyone should read that book. It's got lots of meditations and sort of thinking exercises you can do both as an individual and as a group.
Okay.
And it's just an invaluable, it's an invaluable book for activists. I think every activist should read that book and understand the principles. And I mean, you don't have to agree with her spirituality, you know, she's a witch. You know, I'm a Christian, but I still got a lot out of that book. I learned a lot from it.
Well, that's admirable. That's you know, we have to be open to you know, the spirit in general, and not try to pigeonhole it or put it in a box like some people want to do. So yeah, we have a recommendation for Starhawk's Truth or Dare and her other writings. Recommendation for Slow Money, an earlier caller, and that's good. I think Jessica had some. Everybody's had some good suggestions, and that's what this show is all about, to turn people on to other ideas and you know, new pathways, doorways to other possibilities. So thank you for calling. We do have a couple more callers. I appreciate
it. Keep listening to the classic rock, because there's a lot of social transformative
right on.
Stuff in that, even though it seems cliche now and old and stupid, but there's a lot there that's worthwhile.
Hey, well, I've played, that's the second Who song I've played for my show, and I've played a couple Jefferson Airplane songs, so I'm a throwback myself. But thank you for calling.
Love the airplane. Okay, thanks a lot, Paul.
All right. Bye-bye. Before we go to our next caller, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Portlander Edith Mirante discusses her new book, The Wind in the Bamboo, A Journey in Search of Asia's Negrito Indigenous People. At 9:30, we hear economics professor Richard Wolff review the history of the economic crisis that we are still experiencing. And thank you all KBOO members for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm. and clicking on Donate Today. You are listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I am your faithful host, Paul Roland, and we are talking about substitutes for more authentic ways of being and ways of overcoming what I call the substitution complex, which is this society that we are living in. And I referred to my previous two shows with Richard Lindsay and Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz. Haven't got much of a chance to talk about them, which is good because we've had some really good callers. I've got a note from a caller, and I'm just going to read this. It says, a listener suggests that you, meaning me, Paul, be the communication hub. Everyone send their contact info to me. Then I send it out to the list so everyone can get together. Wow. I think that might be perhaps a bit more ambitious than I am prepared to go for, although I have thought of it. If I am able to get my own life more together and feel more abundance in my own life, I might just try to take something like that on. For now, I am going to give you my email address and make no strong promises about what is going to happen, but I will try to respond at least briefly to everybody who writes me. So with that, we do have a couple more callers. Harry, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings, Paul, and thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to, my first comment was last week's show. I tried to call in, but it was one of the biggest myths we have is the Lewis and Clark expedition. And I was wondering, did you have a chapter in her book about that?
Well, while you make your further comments, I will look in the index and tell you.
Okay, yeah. Well, what happened was the, when Lewis and Clark, one of the big myths was it was just a virgin territory. Well, it was a French territory. They had to bring a French guide with them because, if I'm correct, Shampui was a French community. And it was there, and they never went to visit it.
Well, it was indigenous territory. I mean, it was, you know, supposedly not nominally, quote, owned. And then, of course, Napoleon sold what he didn't own, really, through the Louisiana Purchase. But, yeah, there were French communities, and I think Roxanne may have actually talked about that they're, you know, the nature of the French trade wasn't the kind of colonial conquest
we really don't know that, because it was never mentioned at all. And also, when they went down the Columbia River, well, if they would have across the other side. Well, wasn't there Fort Vancouver? It was there. If the British would have ran it, they would have ran into the British. Well, Lewis and Clark would have been shot because they would have been out of uniform. And when they went to Astoria, their job was to build a fort and put the American and fly the American flag at the mouth of the Columbia. So it was a military expedition,
right?
And also was to find out what the natives were. The natives armed,
right? Well,
the British didn't arm them, neither did the French.
Well, it was also geological. It was also to kind of map routes, you know, across the country for future, colonial expeditions, and to do a lot of, census of the different kind of the terrains, minerals, resources, animals, whatever, both for, quote, scientific, but, you know, scientific purposes in those days basically were in service of empire, and to get to know the different native tribes, so then they could, you know, eventually deal with them. And it was a colonial expedition, imperial expedition for sure.
Yeah. Okay, my next comment is about the Occupy movement. Well, it was called Occupied Wall Street because of, everyone forgets the recession that we went through. And you mentioned that you were part of the Occupied Washington. Did they do any major demonstrations? Like, did the people in government know you were there?
Well, they couldn't help but know. It was amazing. There was, you know, two tent encampments right in the middle of downtown D.C., like surrounded by government and office buildings. We were like tents filling McPherson Square, and then what was that little triangle called, Pennsylvania Avenue, where the first one was called Stop the Machine. It was actually planned before Occupy got started, actually. It was like a plan for a four-day, you know, encampment, and that's all it was going to be. So they were there first, and then Occupy exploded. So there's two different encampments. Oh, yeah, of course they knew. It was right in the middle of D.C.
Oh, okay. Well, my next question is, your last name is Roland. And when I was growing up, I used to build model airplanes. And since it's the 100th anniversary of World War One, there was a German airplane, fighter plane, called the Roland 28. And it was made by Baron von Roland. You're not related on this.
I highly doubt it, because actually my dad comes from northern Italy, and it's pronounced Roland. It's French. It's a long story, but it's on the border of France. No, who knows? I mean, people migrated throughout Europe, so, you know, family names, you know, have very complex histories, but not directly related to my branch, I don't think. But enough about me. We only have 8 minutes left, and we have another caller.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for calling. Well, we do have Marilyn on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air.
So I have two ideas for increasing community in the KBOO community. And one of them is related to the one that I guess somebody emailed you about or called you about, some way that we could, the people of KBOO could talk to each other online. I'm not very technologically savvy, but some way that we could talk to each other. So that's one idea. And the other idea is that Lori of Moving On, I met her at that open house that the previous station manager had when KPOJ stopped doing talk radio.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That was so cool. I got to meet Joe and Lisa, and it was great. I live in Molalla, so I don't go to Portland. And so that in itself would be a great thing, I think, to have more events like that. At that event, I met Lori, and she had this idea of local communities of KBOO. She had moved to Milwaukee, and she was hoping for a local Milwaukee KBOO group, community group. And I live in Molalla. I would love to have something like that in Molalla. It was going to happen, but then it got so political and difficult that it never did happen then. But I would be glad to propose it to whoever could take it from there at KABU and help with it.
Well, you know, send me an email in any case, so then at least I have it in my email, and it won't disappear unless, you know, we have a comet strikes and destroys the internet. But okay. But yeah, there is no system currently for really doing that. I mean, this is something that I've been talking about at KABU somewhat, you know, to actually use KABU more in terms of like actually helping people come together physically in geographical areas. And so I'm really glad you called with that, because that really fits in with what I'm trying to move towards doing, at least partially with my program, and hopefully we can do more of that. So yeah, I mean, more events, like, you know, being Portland centric has advantages as KABU, but also, you know, we do have all these other areas where a signal goes out. So I think your idea is spot on. And I mean, in this particular moment, I'm not sure how, you know, I can say anything that would, you know, help it move forward. But if you're interested and you connect with me and other people have heard this, and hopefully something will connect up that way.
Can we communicate with the station managers?
The station manager, I think it's Monica at kabu.org, I believe. You can call the, for anybody who's interested in, everybody has an email address, all the different positions here at KABU. Okay. So anybody who wants to know how to get in touch with the program director, the morning news and public affairs director, anybody, call the front desk, 503-231-8032, or you can just stay on the line and Steve will get your, you know, give you the information, but the easiest thing is just to call that up. It's actually manager@kabu.org. So, and Monica Beamer and Mike, that's M-I-C Crenshaw, are our co-station managers. And I could give you the other positions, but we only have 2 minutes left and we have one more caller I'd like to squeeze in.
Okay,
so
thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. So Our last caller is Steve. Who's our next caller? Steve, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, there's a couple of minor historical inaccuracies that the gentleman, the previous gentleman had. It's, you know, I'm not making a troublemaker or anything like that, but in 1804, when Lewis and Clark came down the Columbia, there was no British settlements at Astoria or Fort St. George, which was as it was known before. Otherwise, they would have just gone in there and got provisions. That's number one. And there was no French.
Except the British did have claims on the territory. There were competing claims.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Right. All the way down to the Columbia River, I believe.
Right.
There was no, virtually no Europeans, and in especially French in Champouy either.
Right.
The Willamette Valley was pristine native land, and virtually the Columbia was also. Just not to be a troublemaker, but that was 1804. The French came in, I believe, the Willamette Valley in the 1830s. Yeah.
Okay, well, I love about talk radio and people who are very attuned to things, that people can call back right away with these things, like the caller called about my inaccuracy on the Who's lyrics. And so I appreciate that. We're going to have to close out. I'm sorry because I have to mention a couple things, and we only have a minute left. So thank you very much for calling.
That's the only point I'm not meant to make anyway. So have a good day, folks.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who called. So the actual addresses are Mike, M-I-C, M-I-C at KBOO.org for Mike Crenshaw, and Monica at KBOO.org for Monica Beamer. The other one, manager@KBOO.org, is not functioning. So those are the addresses. Thank you, everybody who called. Thank you for listening to KABU. My name is Paul Rowland. Stay tuned for more great programming. KBOO Portland.
just in my mind.
Hear poetry from the prisoners at the Oregon State Penitentiary.
Hood anthems become multi-million-dollar commercial jingles. But the question is, who's getting paid and who's really getting played? Such a volatile minefield.
In this world of cold concrete and lifeless steel, there is no warmth here, no affection, no touch.
But more than the cacophonous conversation, I crave the pleasure of feeling myself. I need you to keep me sensitive.
Hear the Uhuru Sasa Poetry Share on Prison Pipeline, November 24th at 6:30 p.m.
Triumphantly, won't you help me sing this song of freedom?
Join KBOO at the Clinton Street Theater for our monthly movie screening night. This month, KBOO proudly presents Alice's Restaurant, the film based on a song based on Arlo Guthrie's 1965 Thanksgiving Day. Alice's Restaurant will screen Wednesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information about the film at KBOO at the Clinton series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under the community events.
You can get-